How are you?
I tried to keep my excitement. This is not working. This is not working. Okay, let's just get on. Let's do the intro because this is gonna be good. Okay, so good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whatever time of the day it is that you're tuning in. Welcome to the Resilient Society Podcast. I'm Cinnamon Key, also known as Naturally Cinnamon, and I am joined by my fabulous co-host.
Hello, I am Sharice Wright of Just Right Ministries. We welcome you. We're so excited that you took time out of your day to spend some time with us. How have you been, Sin?
I'm good. I am excited to have this conversation on this wonderful Friday night in Florida, since you're still in Florida. Just gonna keep tossing that out there. Okay, you know, on this Friday night where we are live in the Resilient Society and on Facebook. As being part of the Resilient Society, you get these cool perks like the live Q&A that happens after we're done recording the podcast. Mm-hmm. The audio for this podcast will not air until Monday morning on all podcast platforms. So be sure to join us at theresilientsociety.com. How are you doing, Sharice?
I am doing well. I realized I was looking at myself and I was like, ooh, I am starting to tan and I am super excited about it. You know, I took my watch off and there was that tan line and, you know, those straps, there was that tan. And I was like, oh, I'm glowing and I'm glistening and I'm like, this is awesome. So,
hey, tan and glow, how you doing?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Awesome. So I love your self-care, and I took a page out of your book and did some self-care today.
Awesome.
I took the entire day. I went to get a massage.
Ooh.
And then I got my nails and my feet done and my eyebrows waxed.
Yes. Didn't it feel good to just do that without being rushed or anything?
It felt great. And you know, I vetted the places. You know, I was like, so what kind of COVID friendly procedures is everybody, you know, I'm still a little skittish, just a little skittish. So what are we doing? I love this nail place because it can house 10 nail techs.
Mm-hmm.
They have 3.
Wow.
Cool. Wonderful. No walk-ins. You have to be by appointment. Mm-hmm. I was like, this works for me. So it felt good. It felt great. And I was super excited for the past few days for tonight. So
yes.
I'm going to do my best not to act like a child in my excitement. But you guys, we did decide that we are going to move past the trauma nugget and woman law.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, gorgeous, we're going to go straight into the topic tonight because we want to dedicate the entire episode mm-hmm. to this topic and this conversation that we're about to have. Now, if those of you who remember in this season 4, episode 5, the Hey Gorgeous nominee was Dr. Edna Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a treat for you all. We have Dr. Edna Bell.
Yes, we do.
So for those of you who may not remember what we said about her, I'm going to read her bio again, and then we're going to bring her to the stage, to the screen, and we're going to go ahead and have our conversation. Because of my jitters, Sharice, I'm going to ask you to take the lead on this because I'm going to be like, Dr. Edna, what about this? So I'm just going to kind of, you know.
All right.
All right. So let me read her bio. Now, Dr. Edna V. Bell is a proud native of Chester, Pennsylvania. She has been in the mental health field for over 20 years. She is currently employed as a clinician for adults with intellectual developmental disabilities and various mental health diagnoses. Dr. Edna also works as a behavior consultant and mobile therapist with children, adolescents, and their families. She's also a certified grief recovery specialist who helps people move beyond death, divorce, and other losses by facilitating grief recovery support groups. Dr. Edna received her doctorate in clinical psychology from Immaculata,
correct.
I practice Immaculata University in 2013. Her dissertation is titled The Perceived Need of Psychological Services in the African American Church and Pastor's Preparation. She felt compelled to research this area as she noticed the outgrowing need for services within the church. Dr. Edna obtained her master's in community counseling from Wilmington University in 2003 and her bachelor's in psychology from Cheney University in 2000. She's an active member of the Wilmington Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. She's also a member of Cornerstone Fellowship Baptist Church, which is under the leadership of Reverend Dr. Donald E. Dunnigan. Edna currently resides in Delaware with her and her family. She's a loving wife, daughter, sister, aunt of three, and dog mom to Charge of the Bulldog and Chop of the Pitbull. So I'm going to bring her to our front and we are going to have this fantastic conversation about some of the trauma we've seen in 2020 about being a Black mourner.
Yes. Welcome, Dr. Edna. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, because we do not want to waste any time, let's get started. So, can you briefly talk to us about what your 2020 looked like and the sudden shifts when COVID entered the US?
Okay. So, 2020 started out like a little bit of a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I lost my grandmother in the beginning, mm-hmm. and then I had a birthday. So I had a nice little get together with my friends and family. That was good. Then my mom's birthday was in March. We were still able to go out. And after that, everything just kind of came to a halt, right? Yeah. Couldn't go out. People were locked down. People were under quarantine. It was just a different type of situation. Mm-hmm. I felt like I lost all the privileges that I had that we really kind of took for granted. Going to get my hair done, going to get my nails done, going to the grocery store. Finding toilet paper, paper towel, and hand sanitizer was just like a battle. So mm-hmm. there was such a shift that happened. So it was a bit of a roller coaster ride in the beginning and leading up to COVID.
Yeah. So how has it affected you professionally?
Professionally, it affected me because I started to work primarily remote. So as you mentioned, I do therapy. I kind of wear different hats. I'm doing the grief recovery. I work with my individuals in different group homes. So I was all of a sudden not able to see them. And for some of them, it was challenging because now everybody's kind of, you know, up to date and up to speed on Zoom and Skype and things of that sort. But some of my individuals, they just, you know, due to their limited cognitive ability, was not able to kind of grasp it. And then there were some kids that I worked with that were 5 years old that were constantly kind of just shut me off because they didn't want to be on the Zoom. So it's been a bit of a shift for me, and I'm still primarily remote. I just recently started going back into the office at least once a week, but for my other jobs, I'm still working remote.
Okay. So can you tell us what are some, so this season we have been intentional with talking about self-care because of everything that has been going on in 2020 and still here in 2021. So can you kind of talk to us? I'm sorry, say it again.
2020 with a wig.
Yeah. Listen, I do understand. So can you tell us what are some of your self-care tools? And did that change for you in light of COVID?
Absolutely. So like I just mentioned, going to the salon to get my hair done, my nails done, pedicures, all of that came to a halt. So I had to start to learn how to do my own hair, my own nails, and, you know, that kind of stuff with self-care. So that was a significant change for me. I know you may look at this as a hobby, but for me, self-care is singing karaoke on Friday nights. Like I go, I kind of just, I'm with myself because my husband doesn't want to do it. So I'm down there and I'm singing karaoke, and that's self-care for me. And just kind of sitting with my own thoughts, just sitting, you know, and relaxing, that's self-care. So there's a couple of other things, like reading. I like to read. My job is, you know, a little bit of a distance. So driving in the car, listening to audiobooks. Mm-hmm. That was a major change that happened when COVID hit. So I didn't mention that, but that was a major change. I couldn't listen to the audiobooks on the ride anymore. So I had to adjust. Yeah,
so what were you saying, Sam?
No, I said it's a good point about the drive itself.
Right. A drive itself was your self-care. So this takes me into the next question. So first, can you describe grief? Can you define grief for us?
Yeah, there's so many definitions out there about grief. Mm-hmm. But the way I say it is just normal, natural reaction to a loss. That's exactly what grief is. And I think when you think of grief, sometimes people think of just death and dying, but it's not just death and dying. There's so many reasons that people grieve, right? People grieve because parents are empty nesters. The kids went to college. A couple may have gotten a divorce, right? Someone lost their finances. So there's different reasons why people grieve. So yeah, that would be my definition.
So with that, can we look at 2020 as a year of grief because there were so many losses.
Yeah.
There were the losses, the physical loss, the deaths. There were so many deaths of people. I think when we closed out 2020, we were at 500,000 deaths, I believe.
Pretty significant, yes.
And then there was the loss of people being able to go and be with their loved one who was in the hospital sick. There were people who lost their jobs. There were people who were now forced to stay at home. And for some people, getting out of their homes, that is their self-care. Absolutely. And so I think at another episode, Sin and I touched on, for even people who are experiencing domestic abuse, that leaving their homes and being able to go to work or go to school was their safe space. And now they are now stuck into this home with their abuser with nowhere to go. So how can we help people understand what, or accept, understand and accept that this is a year of grieving, that this was a year of grief, because there were so many things that we lost. People had vacations, people had weddings planned, people ended up filing for divorce, being in the house with their spouse for so long. So how can we get people to kind of understand what grief really is? Because like you said, it's kind of difficult because people tend to only think of grief in the sense of the physical death that accompanies grief, as opposed to all of the other things that come along with grief.
Right, and I think that just to kind of reiterate what I said, people think of grief as death and dying. Mm-hmm. You know, 2020 was major for all of us. Everyone's life came to a halt as we know it. So meeting the person, like if you're in private practice or you're doing therapy with someone who has experienced this, just kind of meeting them where they are and saying, hey, it's okay. What you went through was grief. It was a loss. Mm-hmm. You had to file for divorce this year. That's a significant loss. People don't think about that, right? Your husband or wife, whoever it is, they take out the trash, they get the mail, now they're gone. So now you no longer have that person that was there for you to do all of these things. That is a loss. And sometimes it feels like a death. So just kind of meeting your clients or people that you work with where they are and letting them know it's okay.
Can you tell us what are the stages of grief?
Sure. The Stages of Grief was developed by a psychiatrist by the name of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She developed the stages. The first stage is denial. So denial is totally not accepting that this loss has happened. So let's say, for example, it was a death of a parent. No, my parent did not pass away. That's kind of where that person would be at that time. Mm-hmm. And then the next stage would be anger. And sometimes you hear people say, I am so angry with God for mm-hmm. taking my loved one. Mm-hmm. Why would God allow me to lose my job? They would express that anger and kind of put it off on God. The next stage, which is the third stage, is bargaining. You may hear people say, hey, I'll give up this, I don't know, bad habit or this vice or whatever it is that they have if you bring back my loved one. So you're going to take, I'm going to stop doing this. And when I wake up in the morning, my loved one's going to be back there with me. Mm-hmm. The fourth stage is depression. So you may see people at this stage, they depressed mood, loss of interest in normal activities. They may gain weight. They may not be able to sleep, may be having bouts of tearfulness on most days. And then the last stage is acceptance. Acceptance doesn't mean, hey, I'm at this place and I'm cured, quote unquote, I'm okay now. It doesn't mean that. It just means I have finally got to the place where I can say that my loved one has passed away and now I can move through this process to kind of deal with it.
Right.
So those are the stages of the five stages there. But what I want to say about that, it doesn't mean, just because I kind of went through that sequence there, it doesn't mm-hmm. mean that the person is going to experience it that
right.
way.
Right.
Someone may jump right into anger mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. they might jump right into bargaining. So mm-hmm. you may go through the sequences a couple of times. So it doesn't mean that they're going to go through it that exact way.
Absolutely. It's not linear.
Right.
So, yeah. Aren't there other types of grief? I very briefly saw this online somewhere and I never did go back to revisit and read it in thoroughly, but there's different types, like there's complicated grief and different things of that nature. And I saw like maybe seven different types. Are they like, is that really a thing? Different types of grief?
So as far as grief is concerned, I kind of follow the guidelines by the DSM-5. Mm-hmm. So there is a thing in the DSM-5 for complicated grief. Okay. And if they pass that stage, then they go into depression. So if it's longer than 2 weeks, then we're looking at a major mm-hmm. depressive episode. Mm-hmm. But you normally, if someone is grieving, you are going to see those symptoms of a major depressive episode initially. You may.
Right.
So that may look like that, but complicated grief is in the DSM-5.
Okay.
So as we've kind of done this, generic overview of grief. And so I want to get a little bit more specific because the topic of this is the trauma of being a Black mourner. So with everything that has happened in 2020 and when we see grief occurring, do you see the effects of grief or the reaction of experiencing grief different in Black people as opposed to other individuals that you may have worked with?
I do, and I can only speak to my experience. Mm-hmm. So this is not research-based, this is just my experience. I do see sometimes in the African-American community, there's always someone in the family that everyone thinks is the strong one. And that person is supposed to hold it together, not cry, not show their emotions. And I actually had an experience where the strong quote unquote person came to me and said, I don't want to be strong anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to let this down. You know, I want to be able to express my thoughts, feelings, and my emotions. Mm-hmm. And I bring that up because sometimes some people don't want to, I find in my experience, they don't want to show that if they have that title. And I know with working with some of my individuals with intellectual disabilities, sometimes there is almost a delayed reaction where months will go by. And then that is when they're starting to process the grief, when they're starting to talk about the loss. So I do see some of a little bit of a difference.
Okay. So we know that the Black church has played a big role in the lives and the support of Black people historically. So what do you think is the role of the Black church in helping individuals grieve and mourn?
Mm-hmm. I think it's major. And again, I can only speak to my experience within the Black church, within the Black Baptist church specifically. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I answer your question with this, but I want to say, I think that the Baptist church does a really good job at making sure that they're reaching out to their parishioners. So mm-hmm. if someone passes away, right now we're in the midst of COVID, so we can't do what we normally would do. But if mm-hmm. someone passes away, there's in the church, they have grief share. My program is a little bit different, but they have grief share in the church, and that you can have the parishioners come in once a week. They're there to support. Someone's running the group, showing the videos, doing the psychoeducational exercises with them, praying with them, giving them biblical context. So they're kind of blending both of those things. Now I see within my church, what we have done, we're reaching out. So we can't go to people's homes and sit with them. We can send cards. We can get on the Zoom. We can go outside of the house and, you know, adhering to CDC guidelines, of course, mm-hmm. and kind of communicate with our parishioners. So I think that it is major. It is major. And they play a major role.
Sin, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I'm thinking now the time frame, the interesting time frame that, and I do agree with you, the DSM-5 does give kind of like a time frame, so to speak, on what is bereavement versus what kind of starts to mirror major depressive disorder. In 2020, since the Black church plays such a pivotal role in mourning, in grief, in loss, and the access to our churches was kind of, not that we couldn't watch church online, but it's something different with the assembly. There's something different when there's fellowship. It's just mm-hmm. different. And so not being able to have that, not being able to access that in the way that we've been so accustomed to doing so our entire lives, really. What do you think, how, I don't even know how to ask this question, will this then show up if somebody was not able to grieve the way that we're used to grieving, the way we're accustomed to grieving, and now it takes us longer to grieve because we're trying to figure out how in the world do we do this? Right. Then is it fair to then say that I may be looking at major depressive disorder just because I'm still trying to figure out how to grieve and it's 6 months later? What do you think about that?
And I think that's something that would have to be assessed by a psychologist, a clinician. You know, if we're finding that people are kind of in this period where it is longer, and like you said, we have to make a major adjustment last year, then we need to kind of, as these clinicians, reach out and see if we can get them in to see someone so that they can be assessed. Because it's hard for us to kind of make a diagnosis without seeing them, you know, and kind of doing the proper assessments to give the diagnosis. But I understand what you're saying mm-hmm. about that. I do understand that.
Right. Yeah, because 2020 was a repeated episode of continuous grief. Right. So it wasn't one thing that you can say, you can't just say, oh, it was COVID. Mm-hmm. Right. The effects of COVID are multifaceted. So there was all of the losses that came with COVID. So did we ever even get to a space to begin the grieving process? Because things continued to happen in life. It wasn't like it was the death of something. And then we're able to kind of begin the healing process, if that makes sense. It was continuous. So have we even gotten to a space to begin the grieving process? Because we're still in the mess of it. Or can you begin grieving, I guess is a better question. Can you begin grieving in the mess of it, in the throes of it? Or do we have to wait until it is over to begin the grieving process?
I think the more insightful you are, the better, right? If you know that there's these losses that are going on, it's like, hey, you know, it's not about just death and dying. I lost my job. Other things have happened. If you know that and you're aware of it, then that's the time to kind of move to that next phase to say, hey, I need to start working on this and I need to start grieving. I think people feel a little bit of a sigh of relief now. And again, I'm speaking for myself. I think there's a little bit of a sigh of relief because you have the vaccine. Some of the restrictions are being lifted. You can kind of get out a little bit more. Grandparents are hearing, I can hug my grandchild now if I have my, you know, the vaccine. So you're starting to see that these layers are starting to come off and life as we quote unquote know it is coming back around. So, I mean, I think you can start the grieving process, but for some people, there's no level of awareness. They don't even know that it's grief. So how do we reach those people is more of the question. So if we know, hey, you have a client that's coming into your office and you know that they've gone through all of these things, it's kind of like, hey, sitting them down, meeting them where they are and saying, this looks like grief. You know, let's talk about this a little bit so we can kind of peel these layers off.
Right. So what would the conversation be not in a professional environment? Because like a lot of our listeners, they're not coming in this space from a professional standpoint.
Sure.
So how do we get them to understand or even recognize their own grief or the grief of those around them?
By just simply asking, hey, how's things been going? You know, you get more information from someone when you ask them, truly ask them, how's your day? How's things been going the last couple of weeks? And then they may start to pour out some things that you had no idea about. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of say, wow, that must be a lot. That had to be a lot for you. That really sounds like grief. And let me tell you a little bit about grief. It's a normal and natural reaction to a loss. Mm-hmm. And you lost your job. Wow, that must be tough. You know, just kind of helping them get to that place to be able to talk about it. So it's just an open conversation with them.
And also, one thing that I've noticed, not just with my clients, but like I've online, just talking to friends, family members and everything. And I started telling people, you got to understand, we had a loss of options.
Mm-hmm.
Just options, just to be able to say, you know what, you know, my coping skill when I'm feeling like this, is just ride over and go to the beach and just sit on the beach. Beach closed. Can't go. Can't do that.
Right.
All right, fine. I'll just go to the park and take a walk. No, they're not letting you do that either. So it's like, what do I do? So the loss of options.
I think even more than a loss of options, it was a loss of control.
Absolutely.
We had no control over anything.
Mm-hmm.
And even the slightest thing, like you mentioned, buying toilet paper.
Yeah.
Like something as simple as buying toilet paper. I'm going to run into the store and pick up toilet paper. And you got in stores and there was no toilet paper.
Right.
I mean, Therese, just the joys of life. I had to make a lot of adjustments. Mm-hmm. My friends laugh at me, but I had to. So I'm used to going out to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing Zoom dinners. It was major for me. So I get everybody on the Zoom. Let's eat dinner on the Zoom. It's an adjustment. It's not the same thing. I get it. But for me, making that little slight change, that little adjustment kind of helped, you know, promote kind of more of a positive move.
Can you give us, so I think that's a great example. Do you have any other creative examples of things that you did as you adjusted your self-care tools?
Yes. So we were kind of locked down in the house. I would go either out front or out back. And I would always tell my friends and family, when it's sunny, go outside, get some sunlight. That sunlight is going to really improve your mood.
Yep.
Even if you can't go outside and sit in front of your, you know, in front of your porch or out back, get some fluorescent lighting in the house and just kind of let that promote your mood. Burning candles, lavender candles, drinking tea, just all sorts of things. I also kind of switch what I kind of take in on television. So I started watching more comedy just because I just needed that. I was sick of the news. I did not want to watch the news anymore. So making those kind of adjustments, family game night, things of that sort. So if you can't go out, do your nails in the house. Make it a thing with your girlfriends and get on the Zoom and do your nails. So it's just, you just kind of have to adjust, which is hard. And my friends will tell me all the time, but I want to go out. I'm like, well, you can't, you know, so this is what you have to do. You have to adjust. So those will be some of the things I would say.
I think we've, I can't think of anything else.
I know. I'm looking to see, did I miss any questions?
So.
Well, can I say something to the audience?
Yes, of course.
I wanted to just kind of, in closing, remind people, when we're talking about grief and we're talking about death and dying, if you have someone who's lost a loved one, you attend the funeral, make sure that you check on them frequently. Okay, we don't want to be overbearing, but what I hear a lot of mourners say to me is everyone was there up until the funeral, but then after that they were gone. I had no one. So I kind of make it my habit to find out the day the person passed away, find out important events like their birthdays, the anniversaries, like just the holidays, another big time. And I make sure that I call, text, email, whatever I can do to kind of show that I'm thinking of them. And it may not be that I'm just kind of flat out saying, hey, I know you lost your loved one this day, because I don't want to make it too hard for them or too challenging for them. But I may say to them, thinking of you, you know, praying for you, sending positive energy your way. So just different quotes and things that I would say to them just to let them know that I'm there. You know,
so you talked about you work with kids. When we read your bio, we talked about you worked with kids. Have you seen a difference in children and how they are managing all of the losses and the grieving? Because I think we just kind of expect them to just always be resilient to everything. So have you seen any differences in how the children that you're providing services to are managing this?
Yes, absolutely. I just had a consultation today and the teacher said, hey, you know what? We have to bring this kid back because when they're home, they're off. They're really off back. Now that they brought the kid back 4 days a week, this individual is happy. They love it there. They just don't want to be home. And it's interesting, just a little twist about that. When the pandemic concerned about those kids that look forward to having meals at school, and now there's meals. So it changes their dynamic as well. One kid said, I'm tired of being home. I want to go be with my friends. I want to be able to participate in this sport. My goddaughter missed her prom, you know. So there's so many adjustments, and for kids, it's kind of hard for them to kind of process it. But again, adjustments to help them, you know, kind of cope and manage, it could be challenging.
So what would you provide, or what would be some of your suggestions for parents to be able to look out for? With their children who may be mourning or grieving?
I would say if they're showing signs and symptoms,
yes,
that they look for.
Mm-hmm.
So just normal activities, if you see that, even if you see an increase in aggression, aggressive behavior, verbal, physical aggression, if you see that they're starting to isolate, going to bed a little bit later, or not eating, or not as talkative as they normally would be. I would say any change, it could be a positive, negative, any change in their behavior, I would kind of say, hey, what's going on? You know, just try to check in with them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sin, do you have any more questions?
I'm very interested in how we'll see over time, you know, what effects we'll see over time of some of the almost, I don't even know if this is a term or not, but almost like the stunted grief, you know, of people, like you said, some not even realizing that that's what it is that they're experiencing. And some people realizing what they're experiencing, going to the norm, and you know, not being able to do the norm, and it's just like, okay, which they could still be in that process. I'm very interested to see, and of course time will tell, time will give us a glimpse anyway, of what that may look like. For example, during the summer months of 2020, I'll say within maybe like an 8-week span, there were 6 deaths, 5 in my family, and then my best friend's mother passed. It was just like just one after the other. And we watched live broadcasts of homegoing services, and we saw photos of gravesite services, and it was just different. It was just different because my family is accustomed to, at least the family in Florida, we're accustomed to gathering, and we're going to have the Tuesday night, we go to Bible study. Wednesday night is the immediate family fish fry, you know, or spaghetti dinner. Thursday night is when, you know, the church comes and brings dinner to the house, and they sit. We sit. A lot of sitting. We go, if somebody's in the hospital, even they're not even passed away, you go to the hospital. I remember when my godmother was in the hospital years ago, my godbrother called me. I packed up all my work, my laptop and everything I had to do, and I rolled up in my little buggy with all my work. I rolled up in the hospital with my snacks, my water, and my work, and just sat there all day in the waiting room. We just sit. And so when those things are not exercisable options, and we just don't really know what to do, it's jolting. So yeah. Just in a way, it's jolting. It's just like, I honestly felt as though I don't know what to do. So the last death was my best friend's mother. And at that point I was like, at all costs, I'm going to the homegoing service. I don't care. I don't care if we sit next to each other. I don't care if we're not social distance. I don't care if somebody don't keep their mask on the whole time. I'm not doing this anymore. This is not working. I don't know how to do this. I can't do this again. And it was just really weird. And yeah. I found myself wondering, so how are others dealing with this too? You know, how are other people not grieving, you know, in the traditions and rituals that we've become accustomed in the different African-American communities and cultures and church spaces and denominations? It's just like, what are we doing? Right. What are y'all doing? Now, I found myself asking, what are y'all doing? What are y'all doing? How are y'all doing? Because I'm just like, this is just a awkward space to be in. So I am just interested in what that would look like in the time to come.
Yeah. And you know, Cinnamon, some of the churches I know are starting to gradually open their doors. I know back in the summer, we did an event outdoors where you just brought, you know, brought your chair, you sat out. Some people did it, some people did not. But again, being able to sit next to each other, being able to hold hands and pray, like all of that was taken away. And you don't really know how people are dealing with it if they're not talking about it. So it's important for your listeners, if there's anyone out there, you heard anything today about the grieving process, please talk about it. please reach out. Like, you're not alone. We all have, I could speak for all three of us, dealt with something in 2020, you know, so make sure that you speak out and talk about it. It's really important. And it's an adjustment. I had to make it, and it wasn't easy, but I did the best I could with the resources that I had to try to keep smiling and also acknowledging when I wasn't happy or when I was sad, you know, so.
And I think for me, one of the things that I was very intentional with saying, because on top of all of the COVID stuff, then my back went out and I couldn't do anything. And then I had to have surgery in the middle of COVID. And I was like, you know, this is a bit too much. And it felt overwhelming. And my son was home. And it was just compounding on top of each other. And I had to remind myself, and I'm constantly saying, to be gracious with myself. I'm always able to find grace to give to other people. But when it comes to me, I'm that one that I expect to have it. And other people expect me to have it all together all the time. Mm-hmm. And I had to say, you know what? You're in a space that you have never been in before. Mm-hmm. And it is okay that you don't have it all together. And it is okay that you don't have all of the answers. Mm-hmm. Be gracious with yourself in this season, because we're still in the midst of it. We're still going through it. It feels like at times there is some light coming in at the end of the tunnel. But like Sin said, we don't know what these long-term effects are going to look like. We don't know what these delayed grief is going to look like. We don't know the physical manifestations that people are going to have who have had COVID. We don't know what the world is going to look like. So be gracious with yourself. You know, I was reading something about how a lot of jobs have figured out how to function without so many employees. So, and without having a physical space, because they figured out how to have their employees work from home. So there are so many unknowns. So we have to remember to just be kind to ourselves as we are navigating these unfamiliar waters, because if we don't, I don't know how we're going to make it, because we've lost a lot. And for some of us, we're still losing and haven't even began really grieving, because we have to just keep going with life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here's a question for my grief expert and my trauma expert, since I have you both here at the same time. How are grief and trauma connected?
Therese, you want to go?
So Edna, can you, Dr. Edna, can you give us your definition of grief again, please?
It's the normal and natural reaction to a loss.
Normal and natural reaction to a loss. And trauma is the response to an event or experience that overwhelms you. Mm. So they are very, very connected. A lot of times I think trauma is, I would say, they're one and the same. Because in it, we are grieving the loss of whatever it is that trauma has taken away from us. So when we look at trauma and grief, we can see them in the same vein. especially when we allow ourselves to expand on the definition of grief and don't allow it to only be about the physical death of someone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So grieving is the response. Trauma is also the response. Grief is the response of the loss of something. And trauma is the response to the event. And how it is overwhelming your life. We don't tend to, when we see a lot of behaviors, a lot of trauma responses manifesting themselves, we don't tend to think of them as grief. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times it is because we've lost something. Right. Be it we've lost control, we've lost a loved one, we've lost our stability, we've lost our home, our family, whatever it is that we've lost. Mm-hmm. I think grief is a more acceptable term. Okay. And trauma has more of a negative connotation and is a tad bit more difficult word for people to swallow. Because I think when we think of trauma, people tend to think that if I'm affected by something traumatic, then I'm weak. I can move on from this, but if we're grieving is considered a normal response to the loss of something. I think they're one in the same. They're in that same vein of the loss of something, and your response to that loss.
And I also, as you were talking, Sharice, I was thinking maybe we should get together and do some research on that topic.
Let's do that. I would love to do that.
Yeah, I think that's good, you know, because like you said, that they, you know, people tend to put a negative connotation to the trauma. So it would be good to kind of combine to marry the two and do some research on that. And I was also thinking research-minded. I was also thinking when Cinnamon was talking about what will things look like in the near future, what will we see with this grief? I was also thinking about surveys, mm-hmm. doing some surveys, sending them out. Mm-hmm. I don't have time for that right now, but that's going to go down on my list of things to do, because you don't know if you don't kind of put it out there in a different, you know, way. So that's another research area that would be good, because we can kind of start to get that data now and see what's going on. So.
And I also think, like, as you were talking, I started thinking, like, with grief, mm-hmm. there is a time limit that's placed on it.
Unfortunately,
there is a time limit that is placed on it. With trauma, there isn't. Mm-hmm. You can have, so say, for instance, you lose your mother during your childhood. That is a traumatic experience, right? Absolutely. We won't carry that over and say, as you become an adult, that you're still grieving mm-hmm. the loss of your mother. But we will say you are experiencing some type of childhood trauma. But is it that you're still grieving the loss of your mother?
Right, because I don't think, you go through the grieving process. I think as time, and I can only speak from the losses that I've had, as time goes on and the years go on, you never forget. You just learn how to navigate this thing we call life and cope with that loss. But you never forget. So does that mean that grieving ends? Just kind of like with the acceptance phase that I was telling you. Doesn't mean that you're okay and all of a sudden grief is just out the window. Right. It just means that you accepted it.
Yeah.
Now comes the healing and the coping.
And the coping. And so I think grief can be looked at in that. Grief can also be looked at as a type of trauma response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love these conversations because as we continue to talk about it and put words to it, I think it's helping some people who may not know how to put words to what it is that they're feeling or thinking or what stage or phase they may be in at this time. And so, you know, what I welcome it and I love it. When a client comes to me and says, I don't know what I'm feeling. I said, do you not know what you're feeling, or are you just feeling a lot of things at once? You don't know which one you want to pick out of the bundle. Mm-hmm. I said, just start saying words. It's okay. They don't have to be the right ones. Just start saying words. But they might be cuss words. If those are the words, let's just get them out. Let's just brain dump. Get it all out. Mm-hmm. What, you know, and then we'll sift through whatever's out. Just go for it. And so I think we're helping people with talking about the fact that, like you said, you may be in an acceptance phase that doesn't necessarily mean you're okay with what happened. You just accepted the fact that it happened. Mm-hmm. That's right. There's still a road ahead of finding a different normal.
Right.
That doesn't mean, all right, I'm okay, I'm good. Not so much. You know, not so much. So yeah, this, oh God, I love this conversation so much. That's why I haven't been saying much, because I'm just like,
Because it is, and it's like we talk about like how trauma lives in your body. So even in that example, it's like we get into that space of acceptance that, yep, this did happen to me. This traumatic experience did happen to me. But the effects of it are still impacting me past the allotted time frame of what society tells me I'm supposed to be feeling this.
Right.
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 And on top of that, just to add, Sharice, when you gave the example of a mother passing away, I think about work. You got 5 days and then you got to get back here.
Got to get back to work.
Three.
Wow. Yeah, and then now you get a mask on and go to work. Right. And for some people, it's a good outlet for them because they say, hey, I really want to be back to work because it helps me kind of get through the day. Mm-hmm. But for some others, it's like, if I don't get back to work, I won't be able to pay my bills. Right. Because I only got five, or like Cinnamon said, 3 to 5 days. That's it.
Right.
To feel, to feel and process through all of this stuff. And so I think as we look, and then you'll turn around in that type of example, we tend to see that manifestation of, and I'm going to, because we typically talk about Black women, you start to begin to see the manifestation of that angry Black woman that we talked about, who really doesn't exist, because that's not, we hate that term. But it is because she has to keep going. And she doesn't have the opportunity. She doesn't get the privilege to sit and process with her feelings, because I have bills to pay. I have people that are depending on me. I have these type of responsibilities. So whatever it is that I am feeling in my mind and my body, it has to go. But it doesn't. It sits there. And then certain situations happen. And then they blow up, and then all of a sudden, I'm the angry Black woman.
Right. And that's when the other person's perception, without knowing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I have all of these wounds that are open and bleeding, and life is continuously cutting me with different situations. Do you at no point expect me to holler out in pain?
Right.
So it's
like, am I angry or am I tired? Maybe I'm confused.
Maybe I'm broken.
Maybe I'm sad.
It's
interesting that you are saying these words now, broken, confused, because in the grief recovery method, we try to, when we're meeting with our grievers, we say things like that. Confused, broken. Yeah. Devastated, you know, we try to stay away from the myth. Like, some people will say things like, you'll get better.
Yeah.
You'll get better over time. Mm-hmm. Just deal with it. Time heals all wounds.
And no, it doesn't.
Don't cry. Oh, no, wait a minute. Cry it out. Okay, no, stop crying. So there's a certain myths out there that people think are helpful, but, you know, sometimes just sitting in silence and just kind of just being in the moment with that person is helpful.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's made me think about one of our things. So.
It is not necessarily true that time heals all wounds.
No. That's a myth.
That if you're not addressing that, and remember, crying is allowed.
Amen.
Yeah.
Like, we have to say, like, make sure that we speak that if you don't address, if we don't address this stuff, time does not heal all wounds. We walk around the walking wounded, and we are then perpetuating this or continuing on this generational unintentional violence to other people. Because if I'm cut up and I'm wounded and then I encounter somebody else, there has to be the expectation that I am going to cut you too.
Mm-hmm.
So time doesn't heal all wounds if we're not addressing our stuff. And crying is allowed.
One of the ways
that it is necessary.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I told somebody once, they were like, well, I don't understand why time, I've given it time and it's not healing. I said, well, let me ask you a question. If somebody breaks a leg and they sit at home with that broken leg up on the couch, a day goes by, a week goes by. Can they get up and walk on their leg? They were like, no. I said, well, why not? Because they didn't get it treated. They got to go to the hospital. Time itself, time alone
doesn't
do it. There needs to be some healing actions applied to the wound during the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you just give time alone doesn't work. Just time alone doesn't work. What it does is it gives you a chance to just adjust to what now is. It doesn't mean you've adjusted in a healthy way.
Right.
You just, so now you're walking with a limp when you could have been, that could be not the case, you know? Right. So you're right. It's not just time. Mm-hmm. It's not. I will say this, ladies, I have been getting some questions.
Okay.
From the Resilience Society and those tuning in that are not part of the Resilience Society, I'm going to give y'all just a few more minutes to try to jump in there, because the live Q&A happens in the Resilience Society specifically. Mm-hmm. So, and these are, I got about 3 or 4 questions. They're pretty good. Okay. So I see the ladies are hanging on so that they can get those questions answered.
Awesome. That is awesome.
Do you have any lasting words that you want to leave with our podcast listeners, Dr. Edna?
Well, just kind of reiterating the importance of, if anything that we said in this conversation today, you feel like sounds like you, please reach out for help. You can reach out directly to me at www.thegriefrecoverymethod.com. You can find the link there, my bio, you can contact me. We just want you to know that there is help out there. If you find yourself crying, as Cherie said, crying is a normal reaction. If you find yourself crying and you feel like you can't get out of that phase, as you slowly start to feel yourself slowing the tears down, start to reflect on fond memories of that loved one or that loss that you endured, so that you can try to get yourself out of that phase. Not saying that you're not going to cry again, but that's just a method that I use specifically with death and dying when I find myself doing that. And then also too, if you want to honor your loved one, throw yourself into some type of charitable work for them, right? You know something that they like, do something. I dedicated my whole dissertation to my aunt when she passed away. So that kind of was a release for me. So that's all.
Can you give us your website one more time?
www.thegriefrecoverymethod.com. It's for all of the specialists, but if you go there, you'll find my email address and you'll also find my specialty area.
Okay. All right. Want to make sure everybody gets that. GriefRecoveryMethod.com. All right. Perfect. Awesome. So we're going to slide on over into the Resilience Society. And thank you, everybody, for tuning into the Resilience Society podcast. To submit a question to us, you know how to do it. Go in the show notes and click on the link. And your question could be read live on an episode, or we could address it directly in the Resilience Society. Be sure to rate us and leave a comment on your podcast listening platform. Share us with a friend or a few. And whatever time of the day it is that you've tuned in, we bid you a good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Good night. All right. See ya.